The last Chabura, we closed with the topic of Chover Chaver, which the Gemara in Sanhedrin described specifically as some sort of snake charming, bringing together animals. And that we saw the Rambam had understood that that was an example of more broadly using spells, abracadabra, incantations, things of that sort. The next couple of Se'if, that been Se'if Mehevav and Zayin. Se'if from Ches Tes and Yud derive from the Mishnah in the opening Mishnah in Perek Chelek. We just talked about Perek Chelek a moment ago before we got started. The opening Mishnah in Perek Chelek talks about largely about Ikari Amunah and other situations one loses what one is endangering, jeopardizing one's Chelek Ha'om Haba. So one of them is Lochesh Al Hamaka. Lochesh ala maka. The Gemara unpacks is not just that one says some sort of incantation over a wound, but that you spit, and there's a combination of spitting and the same psukim. Spitting and the same psukim, and the shacht sivka yud suggests maybe specifically same psukim that contain Shem Hashem. So Shulchan Aruch quotes here sivches halochesh ala maka ola chole verokek. Wow. So he's explained Lochesh HaMaka is this combination, the spitting together with Kriyas HaPsukim. The Taz and Sifka and Vav points out Machlokas HaRishon doesn't matter what the order is. Is it specific because I'm reciting the Pasuk over the spit or spitting afterwards, as long as the two are in conjunction. And the Shachar goes on to quote from the Gemara of Eino Rokeik. In Eino Rokeik, if it doesn't involve the spitting, Isur Miik, still Aser. Still Aser, but not the severe level of Ein Lochel Kalam Haba. Shach quotes, begins Sivkat Yud. Row cake with a pasuk emas kirin shem shemala rakika. That's a severe chilul Hashem. That's a severe bizayin to shem shemayim, a bizayin to Torah, perhaps in general. To combine it with the rakika. That's what the Taz expands upon. Sifkan hey, Hatam, he writes, emas kirin shem shemayim la rakika avi bizayin chas v'sham. Such a Design Shem Shemaim. Person spits. He says Shem Hashem. So that's what the Elohei Kol Maba. And says that's why the Taz says the common practice in many kehilos was to spit during Aleinu. This is the first you would say spitting during Aleinu. Rechamal Tzlan. Elohei Kol Maba. He explains no. Ein Hakshes Mashenogim Birakika Kodim Anachnu Korim. They would spit before Vanachnu Kor Meshtachvim. So at first glance, it's the same concern. No, the Shema Kol Yodim Sharekike Libizayin Hagilulim Shalov Dekochavim. It's not. It's very clear that it's not in reference to the fact that we're Kor Meshtachvim the Kadosh Baruch Hu Chas V'Shalom. The spitting is not directed at that. It's rather at the line which he's implying the Taz. So the preceding line, which was censored in many Sidurim, Shehem Meshtachvim Vehevel Varik Umespalim. El Lo Yoshia, it's a reference to Avodah Zarah. In reference to that, the minig in many kilos in Europe was to spit. It was a sign of bizayin to the Avodah Zarah, not Rachman Tzlan, bizayin to Rabban Shalom. The Hevel of a Rick, that's also part of it, was Roke. Roke sounds like Rick. Okay. So this is Adrabah, that's not bizayin to Rabban Shalom. It's Kavod Shamayim Shemazkir Achakach. So that's what the Taz explains. It's not just a rule, but it's a Milsa Bataima. It's a milsa b'taima. So that level one, the most severe level, is a combination of the rakika of the spinning together with the pasuk. As the Shulchan Aruch had gone on to say, just to recite a pasuk over the wound is still forbidden unless it's a concern of pikuach nefesh. So how do you understand that? How do you understand that? That's what the Taz goes on to explain Sifkat and Zayin. Esur miyikah lochesh pasuk below as karas Hashem. or for that matter, sha'ar choli, she'en amak, it doesn't have to do with a wound, but you're reciting a pasuk to somehow solve a medical problem, a wound, an injury, illness, what have you. And the reason, and the Pesach Tshuva seems to explain, in Sivkat and Hay, he quotes the Zayd of the Panim Iris, who basically indicates that this is a concern of a Darki Amori. This is a concern of Darki Amori. Essentially, Chukazakam, saying you're doing something that has no basis in science. That's how the Panim Iris understood the Gemara and Shabbos that he quotes. The Rashi and Chulin. If it's not Al-Hachola, it's Aser. You're doing something to the sick person, so that could have a scientific basis, some sort of therapy, some sort of I'm having some sort of physical impact on the chola, whether I'm administering a medication, whether there's some sort of physical manipulation. Okay, so that might help the chola in some way. That might help the wound, the injury. But if there's no contact whatsoever, Panim Iris is talking about some type of segula. The women would say, if the baby can't sleep, this was a superstitious segula to solve a colic, that you cut the nails and some of the hair and you put it inside an eggshell and so on and so forth, and you put it under a willow tree, and that somehow is supposed to solve the colicky baby. She says, that's clearly unscientific. It has nothing to do. You're not impacting the child in any way. So that's, again, the Pesach Tshuva gets involved in the details. But that appears to be the understanding of why we differentiate between level one and level two. Why it is that with the Rekika, so that's a problem of Bizayin Shem Shamayim, and that's Ein L'Chel Kalam Haba. There's no Rekika, it's not a problem of Bizayin Shem Shamayim, but it's this type of superstitious skula. You're misusing the pasuk to just do hocus pocus. So that's the Easter that we discussed earlier. And then there's the third level, which appears in this. And I should say the second level appears in Siftes as well. If a child was attacked, a child was wounded, you don't just put a Sefer Torah on him to make him better. Read psukim over him to make him better. That is this problem. Like, unless, as the Shach points out, Sifkan Yud Beis, you can't be misrape b'divrei Torah imlo lahagen, unless it's for protection. As the Shulchan Aruch quotes the Sif Yud, Habari muter likras psukim lahagen alav namazik. Someone's healthy and he wants to remain safe. He can say psukim to help him remain safe. What does that mean? So that's based on the Gemara talks about saying Kriya Shema Alamita. Okay, so why is that any different? Why does it have to do with solving a problem versus avoiding a problem? Well, this is like a Davar Aved versus Minyas Revach. Well, what does it have to do with the Yisr of Darkei Mori? So that's why you take a look in the Gilir Marshon, the little letters around the bottom, in the edge of the page, when he comments a Sif Yud, he quotes a Sefer Achinuch. That lahagen shiny means lo asra Torah shiyomer adam divrei Torah lo orer nafsho letova kadesh yagen olav osos chus l'shamer. Oh, he says it's not about avoid staying healthy versus healing a sickness. It has to do with what your kavana is. Lahagen olav. The point is not so much I'm not sick yet. The point is I'm saying the psukim not to magically protect myself. I'm learning. I'm davening. A person's going to say Tehillim as a form of davening to Ribbono Shel'olam. So that's not a problem of being misrapi b'divrei Torah. If I'm saying a derech tefillah. Right? Or I'm learning. And I hope that the schus of Lima Torah will stand me in good stead. And keep me healthy. Or for that matter, heal. Right? You're allowed to say psukim not only to stay healthy. You're allowed to say Tehillim to daven for a chola as well. If the kavana is I'm davening, or the kavana is I'm learning, but if I'm just saying the psukim as some sort of magical incantation, then the fact that they're psukim in Tanakh doesn't solve the problem. That's to misuse Torah as a skula. To misuse Torah as a skula doesn't make it any better. As a matter of fact, look at the Rambam in Hilchas Mezuzah. He talks about very, very vehement things to say about the practice at the time, less common now than it was then, of Jews who would write all sorts of Kabbalistic inscriptions, names of Malachim and things like that, and the mezuzah, make the mezuzah into a kameah, into amulet. I was very, very sharp about that, about the misusing a mitzvah, abuse of a mitzvah, to make it into a mere skula. That it's not quite being rokeik on the pasuk, but it's a bizayin to the pasuk. Someone had a question. No, to learn Torah, I hope that the schus. If I'm learning Torah and I want the schus to help me succeed in something, to stay healthy, to get healthy, whatever it is, so that might be Talmud Torah Shel Lishma in the positive sense of Talmud Torah Shel Lishma. Again, that's a sort of Nar Sugi right now. The Selzel, let's talk on Mashi Yichid Beni, is that Shel Lishma, is that Lishma? And even if it's Shlo Lishma, it's the positive type of Shlo Lishma. Be right, Tosas points out that when we talk about sometimes Shlo Lishma seems something incredibly negative, Mutav Lo Yil Nefcha Shil Yasu Alpanav, so that's when it's Lakanter. I don't think that's this. No, what we're saying is, if I'm saying the Lahagain, I'm learning, I want this Chus to, I hope that this Chus will help me, Rebbeinu Shlom will protect me. So that's takamata. When I'm saying the Divrei Torah Derech Skula, Derech Lachash, I don't know. That's like that's not quite the same as Lakanter. Lakanter is where I'm learning Torah, but the motivation is a negative type of Shlo Lishma. Lakanti means I'm learning not a benign type of Shlo Lishma. I want the cup, I want the money, I want the prize, but I want to learn Torah in order to use it to make other people feel small. So that's a very negative type of Shlo Lishma, worse than not doing the mitzvah at all. Here, I think the issue is I'm not learning. I'm abusing the psukim themselves. It's not that I have negative motivation. It's what I'm actually doing, the action itself. I'm misusing the psukim. Just like, I don't know, if I took a Sefer Torah and hit someone over the head with it. So the action itself, I'm using a Torah, physically a Sefer Torah, to do a Maisa Isser. And it's that much worse. To take a bat and hit someone over the head is an Avera. In a sense, to hit someone over the head with a Sefer Torah is like a double Avera. I'm hitting someone, and I'm being mevaza the Torah by using it for a Maisa Isser. So I think that's maybe a mashal what's going on here, the analogy of what's going on here. I'm engaged in Lachash, and I'm misusing a psukim of the Torah for lachash. Want to still get to two other topics, to the questions of Dorish Al Mesim and to questions of Kishuf. The Dorish Al Mesim, the Shulchan Aruch in. Let's circle that before we go on to Dorish al-Mesim. One more issue in the world of Lochash al-Maka, the Ramah in Sif Ches. The Ramah in Sif Ches had introduced another variable. Again, within the three levels, the Rokek is Ein Lochayek al-Mahaba, then just to use the Pasuk Derech Lachash as Aser, and to use the Pasuk Lahagin as a Schus, the Schus Lima Torah, or the tefillah is mutter, but in terms of that original worst level, I'm actually rokeik with it in conjunction with Shem Shamayim. So Ramah had raised the issue in Sifchas, well, how about if I'm saying in translation? Saying in translation. He said, if I'm saying the pasuk without the rakika level 2, so I think that maybe should be mutter. But if I'm being rokeik, so that's a... That's a problem. That's a problem. It's interesting. The Shach gets involved in a larger question, Machlokas Bach Ramah, about about Shem Shamayim in translation. It's a larger issue. He talks about saying gut, Belashen Ashkenaz, or bug, Belashen Poland, Verusia, because in Slavic languages, bug is the word for God. And in German Yiddish, it's gut. And the discussion about to what extent do the dinim of Shem Shamayim apply even in translation. So he recommends being machmir, and certainly to use Shem Shamayim even in English in a sort of a flippant way definitely is a violation of the spirit of the law, maybe even the letter of the law. And so the Shach is definitely hesitant. The Marsha raised an interesting question. He quotes a Chavis Yoyah, the Marsha de Maschal Bilashon Chol, on the relevant to this Shach. Quotes the Chavis Yoyah, talks about you have Shem Shamayim or Psukim in translation. Maybe there should be more Chamer if they're in translation, but written in Hebrew letters, which was Jews in various parts of the world traditionally had done. Ashkenazi Jews had been writing Yiddish for hundreds of years in Hebrew letters. In Arabic countries, Jews have been writing Judeo-Arabic in Hebrew letters. The Rishonim who wrote Svarim in Arabic, typically they were writing in Arabic, but with the Hebrew alphabet, not with the Arabic alphabet. A similar, again, for Ashkenazim, similar to Yiddish. So the Chavis Yoyah, interesting. So Chavis Yoyah thinks, in terms of this issue of to what extent does the Kedusha carry over if you translate Shem Shamayim or a Pasuk into foreign language? He says, well, if it's in writing, maybe the alphabet should matter. Now, that's an interesting twist on what the Ramah talks about near the end of Hilchos Sefer Torah. Maybe some of you have heard Rav Schachter speak about this. The Ramah is concerned with using Ksav Ashuri, Ashuri font, for secular purposes. And it seems to indicate that that's why the development of script, the development of Ksav Rashi and other scripts was to allow for a non-Ashuri way to write Hebrew if one is writing Divrei Chol. Schechter is careful about this in terms of writing, printing invitations in script during Ksav Rashi, rather than he assumes it applies more broadly to block letters, not just to Mamish, you know, Ksav Ashuri in particular. So when the Chavis, again, the Marsha here is according to the Chavis Yoyer, an interesting twist on that. If you see that there's a degree of Kedusha in the Ksav Ashuri font, that's why you wouldn't want to use it for Divrei Chol. So that may also lead one to believe that if I'm writing another language, even if you think that another language, translating the Pasuk, translating Shem Shamayim to another language reduces the Kedusha, but maybe if I write the other language in Ksav Ashuri, maybe that will retain more of the Kedusha, and there'll be more of a concern in terms of Rekika and so forth. Sif Yud Gimel, the Shulchan Aruch turns, sorry, I'm skipping around a little bit here. Sif Yud Gimel, Shulchan Aruch turns to Dorei Shel HaMesim, another one of the Lavin in those Psukim that the Siman Kufayin test is dedicated to. Shulchan Aruch quotes the scenario that's described in the Sugan Sanhedrin Samachay. Mar Ivat Smo Velomav Yitzakvar, a person starves himself and he sleeps in the cemetery. Sounds very macabre. Not as it disturbing, but his motivation in this case is Kadesh Tishra Lav Ruach Hatoma, trying to connect with Ruach Hatoma, trying to connect with the spirits of the dead. So that is that's a violation of this lav of Dorei Shel HaMesim. Now the it seems very specific, and it seems very far from our reality. Imagine most of us don't know a whole lot of people or anyone, or have heard of anyone in the recent past who has done this. If you do, you probably want to get them some help. Someone who's fasting and sleeping in the cemetery in order to connect with the dead. So number one, the Rambam understands, if you look in here in Perek Yudalef, Halachi Gimel, when he starts to write Dorei Shel HaMesim, he understands that that's an example of a larger category, much as he did with Chover Chaver. He understood that the example the Gemara gave was a larger, was it the case the Gemara described was was only an example of a larger category of using the spells and incantations. So Rambam here understands that this Lan Beis HaKvaras is one example, one illustration of the larger category of necromancy, of doing something or another, some sort of process that's meant to allow you to communicate with the dead. So although the Lan Beis HaKvaras, I believe, is out of style, but seances and other such occult practices do have a certain following among people who are into this type of thing, Rachman Fun, seeking to speak with the dead. So that's a real issue. And the Shach already broadens the discussion also to going to the Beis HaKvaras for other reasons. So he quotes a machlokas between late Rishonim and the Bach, going to how hesitant should one be to go to the Beis HaKvaras, and the Gilui Marsh continues this conversation to go to Mishatech al Kivri Tzadikim and go to Kivri Tzadikim. So many people assume that's a wonderful thing. Is it a wonderful thing, or are you playing with fire? You're getting close to the concern of Dorish al Mason. So there are different approaches in Poskim. The Gilui Marsh is quoting the Darkei Moshe Hilchos Rosh Hashanah, who understands that go to Beis HaKvaras to daven, which was particularly practiced Aseres Yemei Tshuva time, and sometimes Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av is more generally just to put one into more of a veilless frame of mind to consider one's own mortality. Aseres Yemei Tshuva time was to consider one's own mortality, to sort of to sober one's thinking. And then to daven, Dr. Moshe appears to say it's going to put me in the right frame of mind to daven. Rucho nachon l'tfila. And then there's also this line about the Marsha quotes to Dr. Moshe about das mesim mahani. The das of the dead will enhance my tfila. The question is, what does that mean? What does that mean? So you take a look at the Darkei Tshuva here in Sivkat Lamed Vav quotes the Chachmas Adam. He quotes the Chachmas Adam, who points out that a very significant Machalokas HaPoskim about speaking to the Mason, which is, I think, in some circles a common practice. To go to the kever and to talk to the deceased parent, the deceased grandparent. So if you look in the Marsha quoted Darkei Moshe B'Shem Ariel, it's hard to read. It sounds like he may be comfortable with that, with talking to the mace. The Chachmas Adam, based on the Bach, is very, very hesitant about that, to speak to the mace. He says what's appropriate, what everyone agrees is fine, to go to the Beis HaKvaras and to speak to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Davening Ribon Shalom, and again, as I said before, for some, this will be a place that will put me into a more focused frame of mind, and perhaps also it's a way of being mazgir the zuchus of the Niftah. The Niftah was a tzaddik, so I daven to Kadosh Baruch Hu, Ribon Shalom should please take into account the zuchus of the tzaddik in considering my tefillah. That, everyone agrees, is fine, to speak to the Ribon Shalom and ask that the zuchus of the tzaddik should be considered. But to speak to the Nifter, so that's something that many poskim are very uncomfortable with. It's not the same as, but similar to the concern that the Maharal and Rebbe Chaim Volozhin and others had about making bakashas of malachim. The fifth Ani Mamin is that we daven only to Ribbono Shel Olam. We don't daven to any other power. We don't daven to angels, and we don't daven to stars, and we don't daven to demons, or to Satan, to anyone else. We daven to Ribbono Shel Olam. So that's why many were, the Maharal, Reb Chaim Volozhin, and others were thought that the one should not make bakashas of malachim, machnisei rachamim. They wanted to omit that, and perhaps even bachuni l'shalom. Whether that concern also applies to dead people, so that's this machlokas here. Is that worse? Is that better? It's Dorish al-Mesim. It's Dorish al-Mesim. On the other hand, I'm allowed to ask, I'm not allowed to ask a malach to help me. I am allowed to ask a live person to help me. That's not called mespalel. So that's part of the question. Would you say they're asking the dead to intercede? They should be a male tiosher. Ask the dead, ask the niftarim to go daven for us. That's what male tiosher means. You're asking the niftar to go daven. So there are sources in Chazal that describe, you know, niftarim davening to Rabbeinu Shalom. But the question is, can I ask the niftar to do that? Or is that a Dorish Shalom Mesim concern? Is that a violation, now that when he was alive, to ask a live person of something is certainly mutter, not a violation of the fifth Ani Mamin, whether asking an ifter to daven on my behalf, that's a concern. If it's not to daven on my behalf, but it's actually do something for me, help me, so that's more of a concern. The Tzad Lahakel, Machnisei Rachim, Rachuyin L'Shalom, the poskim have is, I'm not asking the malachim to do something for me. I'm asking them to daven on my behalf, to join me in davening, to convey my tefillos to Rabbeinu Shlom. Maybe that's mutter. To ask the mama hilfmir, ask the nifter to help, that's already something that one ought to avoid. It is, there are Jews who do that, but we would be better off avoiding that. We'd be best off to daven to Rabbeinu Shlom for once to go to the kever, if that's inspiring, and that it's mazgir schus hanifter, but to direct one's words through Rabbeinu Shalom is the safest and most productive way to go. Again, this is something, obviously, the situation is very emotionally fraught, not a question one would deal with or dismiss lightly, but these are some of the halachic issues. And if you dali go on to talk about communicating, not asking the malachim to help, not asking the nifter to help me, but just communicating with the nifter, or asking the nifter to come to me in a dream, or something like that. So that's a debate. That's a debate. Mechaber Amo again, the details, the shach. Based on, as the Baragola points out, looking back to Beis Yosef, there is a Gemara in Brachos Daf Yud Ches that talks about this chassid who had to leave home, and he spends the night, I think Rosh Hashanah night, in the Beis HaKvaris, and he hears the mason talking to one another about what's going to happen the coming year, and then he goes back the next year, he hears some more. So the question is, do you see from that Gemara that it's mutter to go hear what the to go seek out communication from the mason? So the Beis Yosef, the Shach quotes some of this. Beis Yosef raised the issue. Number one, it's not clear that he was going to hear. He was going because he had to leave home. Look at the scenario there. A lack of Shalom Bais. He had to leave home. Apparently the only place he could stay was the Beis HaKvaris. Once he was there, he ended up hearing a conversation, but he hadn't sought it out. And the question is, why did he return the next year? Once again, there was a Shalom Bayis problem, or he went back next year to hear, but maybe still just going to hear their conversations, going to hear the mason talking to one another is different than seeking out that they communicate with me. Ha'olam Mekol Ha'amur, many of these scenarios, one is playing with fire. And the best would definitely be to avoid the whole parsha. And let's close with a discussion of magic that really centers around Sif Tezvav. Ochazainayim Aser Ide Sefer Yetzira Mutter. The Isur Daraisa Chiev Skila of Kishuf. And then Ma'onin, one of the approaches to Ma'onin, Machlokas HaTanah, the Ba'am Samachayim Abayz in Sanhedrin, Ma'onin might be Miloshin Ayin, Ochiz Ezvainayim. Just sounds like an optical illusion. I'm grabbing the eye as opposed to actually performing magic. There is some confusion. It gets confusing how the Gemara talks about there's a difference between Kishu, where you're Chayef Skila, and Ochiz Hainayim, where it's an Iser, but not a Chayef Skila. And then Alidei Sefer Yetzirah, the Gemara says, that's Hetzer Gamor. That's where the Shulchan Aruch quotes here. Alidei Sefer Yetzirah, through Kabbalah's mutter. So how you differentiate between the two, between Kishu Machi Zainayim? So if you hold not like the Rambam, if you believe that Kishu really works, it really works, there's really something there, it's a koach that HaKadosh Baruch created, that people are not supposed to access, but sometimes do, be iser. Okay, so Kishu is actually magically changing reality, and that's Chiyuv Skila. And Chiyuv Zeinayim is where I make it seem as though I've done magic, but just sleight of hand. For the Rambam, it's not as clear. The Rambam holds even the Kishuv is just tricks. And furthermore, there's a steer between Sif the Halachates, Halachatazvav, and the Rambam, where the Ochiz is Zeinayim is Loka or not. It seems like almost like there are two different. There's Kishuv, and then there's one type of Ochiz Zeinayim, which is a knockoff of Kishuv, and then there's Mir Ochiz Zeinayim, I'm actually, you know, physically doing sleight of hand, and that is, that's a Lav Sheyesh Mamais, and there you get Malkus. So it's hard to know. It's a question I've thought about for a long time. I want to have a lot of clarity how the Rambam of all people, who doesn't think that Kishuv ever really means anything, he somehow has three different levels of appearing to do magic. Kishuv and Achiz Einayim is a knockoff of Kishuv, and Achiz Einayim Halachates as a form of Onin. That's not clear to me. It does feed into the Machlok Zaposkim, which the Pischei Tshuva quotes in Sifkat and Zayin, the second half of Sifkat and Zayin, quotes in the Chachmas Adam. Hisra'im ha-badchanim. Chachmas Adam complained bitterly about the badchanim. Badchanim sounds like badchanim at a wedding. Osim achidas einayim al-chasinus. They're calling the Toshenspieler. They were playing at magic. Sounds like they're playing with their hats, maybe. Not clear. Taking pulling a rabbit out of the hat. It's over in Belavda Raisa. A mitzava laso some. Pischei Tshuva goes on to quote from the Chachmas Adam, the end of Sifkat and Zayin, Pischei Tshuva. Over Belifnei Iva. If I hire them, the practitioner, the magician, he's violating the lav. He's violating Issa Daraisa of Achiz Einayim. And if I hire him to perform at my wedding, so I'm violating Lifnei Iva. And he thinks even usher to watch. Chachmas Adam thinks it's usher to even watch such a performance. So, Shechter points out, Bezmanazah is machlokas whether we accept this Chachmas Adam or Moshe Feinstein, who seems to and the Bevadyan, the Tshuva that was in the Maamar Kamos, he seems to be a strong Chachmas Adam man in this regard. He thinks that doing magic, contemporary magic, is a lav of Moed Achiz Einayim, lav of Monin. And Moshe Feinstein, the long tshuva, so he seems to come to the conclusion. He says that you never heard a psak from me halacha lemaisa because I've never seen this. He says, I go to weddings to see Bad Chanum. Sometimes I've never seen Bad Chanum do magic. I guess the Bad Chanum styles had changed from Lithuanian weddings in the 1700s to Lithuanian weddings in the 1900s. So he said, I don't see Bat Chanum doing magic the way Chachmas Adam did. So I never passed in this halacha l'maaser, Moshe says. But I said, I would be hesitant to make against earlier poskim. But he seems to think that one perhaps is room to make if it's clear, if the person is not presenting it as truly magical, as supernatural. That's the theme of Rav Moshe. That's again the long tshuva. He works with the Shach, the Bach, and so on and so forth. Gets back into the Rishonim, the Rambam and others. Maybe the issue is because it's a hasasa l'avodah zarah. I'm making it seem like that all this narishkeit is real, and people may come to believe in avodah zarah, rachman l'tzlan. He says that maybe if it's understood from context that it's there's nothing supernatural, it's just technique. It's all sleight of hand, everything is physical, and the question is just how am I, you know, I've got some talent, but that's all it is, just a physical, scientifically, rationally explainable talent, sleight of hand, misdirection, things of that sort. So then Rav Moshe Feinstein seems more open to being Mikkel. And some contemporary posts can argue that there are people like David Copperfield who advertise themselves as illusionists. They don't even claim to be doing anything which is supernatural. Adrabba, their whole premise is everything makes sense, but you can't figure it out. It's a riddle. Can you figure out how I did this? So once that's the presentation, then there's probably more room to be mekel, it would not fall under the rubric of achizas einayim. And I would close our limud of kufayin tes with the shach in terms of sefer yitzira. And the Shach points out, again, the Shulchan Aruch is quoting the Gemara Sanhedrin, that to perform something based on Sefer Yetzirah is mutter. Shach explained, Lasos Lechatchila, that's mutter Lechatchila. Shem was Hakol Hashem. That's accessing the Shem Hashem. Hashem is Baruch Nosem Behem Koach, Sheyuchlu Lefol Yedeim HaChasidim HaNevim. If the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, he gave power, some sort of supernatural, metaphysical power to his names, to Shem Hashem, and was meant for tzaddikim to use. So if I operate, do miracles based on Sefer Yetzirah, so I'm adding to Kavod Shemai. But he goes on to say, so sounds good. You have a tzaddik who's doing moifsim. Now, but the problem is the Shach, who lived in the 1600s, already said, but yis asku behem bekedusha v'tayra, ulitzorach kedusha Hashem, ulitzorach mitzvah rabbah. He says one needs to be very, very careful. He's quoting the Bach. That one needs to be very, very hesitant to do this. It has to be done only with great kedusha and tara, and only l'shem kedusha Hashem, l'shem mitzvah rabbah. And he goes on to say, Lo nimsa b'zeh b'doros haloba v'mzein harabim. We no longer have these scenarios of that degree of kedusha and tara tzrav. This is the Shach quoting the Bach. This is going back to the 1500s. He says even in the days of Yishayahu Hanavi, Yishayahu was nenash for not using Shem Hashem properly. Kol shkem izman hazeh iyav shalinog b'tar v'kedusha rachmana li baboy. Kadosh Baruch Hu cares about kavana. To be honest with him. So he quotes, that's the Ayin Tazayin, that Terazav, that's the Levush, excuse me, I said the Bach, I'm sorry, the Levush. The Levush on this Chelik of Tur Shulchan Aruch. And Shach says, he agrees. He says, he quotes Sifrei Kabbalah, Mechabrim Dorshei Rishumos. They are very, very hesitant, even those who are learning Kabbalah, very hesitant about Kabbalah Ma'asis, about practical Kabbalah. So that's Pshatna, the Mishnah and Avos, Hishtamash B'Tag HaChalaf. So one needs to be very careful. Gamba said at the end of the Sifka, and Gamba Sifra Mikubolim, Mivoar, Sha'avon Gadol Hu HaMishtamash B'Shmo, Al Kain HaMoneya Yivarach. He who refrains from this will be blessed. And that perhaps is a good way to close. The bookends of our limud of this Simon, it began with Tavimitiya Mashem Lokecha, and we end with HaMoneya Yivarach. That there are a lot of details about getting involved. This is mutter, that's mutter, this is aser, that's aser. But the overall thrust of the poskim, the letter of the law, and even more so the spirit of the law, is the Talmud Tiyah Mashal Mekachem. In the fullest sense of the Rambam, the Ramban. That one needs to steer clear of sketchy uses of occult. One needs to steer clear of abuses or dubious uses of Shem Shamayim, and Tamim Tiyam Hashem Lokecha. Kadosh Baruch Hu wants us to learn Torah, Kadosh Baruch Hu wants us to do mitzvahs, Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us Tariq mitzvahs, and we should focus on doing Ratzon Hashem. That's our melacha, and Dam to Kadosh Baruch Hu that he should take care of us. Melacha Shamayim. Okay, Chevra, thank you so much. Thank you so much.